everybody.
Hello.
Hello.
And welcome to Three Bean Salad, a show where three men talk about a topic sent in by the audience. We'll get to that later. But first, what have you guys been up to?
Hi, Ben. Mike here.
Hi, Mike.
I've got a tree surgeon in next door's garden, which might be making quite a lot of noise through the show.
Is that true?
Yes, sorry.
Oh. Blimey.
Not much I can do about that. There's also someone who seems to be beating the proverbial seven shades out of some white goods in the other house on the other side. Basically, the economy is thriving here, but it might be quite noisy.
Yeah, you're in the white hot heat of...
Works.
Well, people cutting down trees.
Yesterday, I experienced a train incident.
Did you?
Oh.
Yeah.
Were you hit by a train?
No. But I was nearly hit on a train.
Oh.
Oh.
So I had to take a train yesterday towards the south of Britain into Sussex.
Okay.
I was headed to Three Bridges, which is one of those sites. Have you ever been there?
I have. Well, I've been through Three Bridges, very near sort of Gatwick and Crawley, that neck of
the
woods.
Yeah. It's quite a sort of bleak rail hub sort of zone place, but I had to go there.
Apologies to our Three Bridges listeners.
Yeah, apologies. So I was on a train heading towards Three Bridges, and loads and loads of people got on the train suddenly.
Mm. Yeah.
And they were all football fans.
Ah.
On their way to watch a football match. Mm-hmm. So I was sat opposite a bald old man.
Yep.
Was it a mirror?
Nice one. I put that there. I left it there.
I could feel. Yeah, I could.
Yeah, there was a gravity, wasn't there?
Yeah. There was. Someone needed to pop that bubble.
Was he looking at you with a degree of nostalgia?
I think he was, actually. Mm. Yeah, I think he was quite dewy-eyed. Well, that may have just been one of the multitude of health conditions he was clearly suffering from. Anyway, we were sat there. So it was me. Well, we were sat on a standard square train table.
Mm-hmm.
We did the traditional thing, which is he was already sat in one corner. I went to the opposite corner on a diagonal.
The Battenberg formation?
The Battenberg, the classic Battenberg. But because that means both people have legroom.
Yep.
Do you know... Because I do, which is the preferable of those positions to be in?
Aisle.
So one is next to the window, one is next to the aisle.
Aisle.
I believe wrong.
Explain.
You want aisle for what? For toilet?
Mixture of toilet and aisle bonus legroom for the aisle leg. The aisle leg can kind of wander. When the trolley's not going past, the aisle leg can kind of wander about.
Mike, we've had words with you about this. The police have had words with you about this. That leg needs to stop a wandering on the trains. Yeah? Because you've got incredibly agile legs. But yeah, because your leg will sometimes be like three rows up, won't it? Like flicking through someone's Hello magazine.
Yeah, trying to get into the first class section.
Yeah. I believe that I see what you're saying, but I think a leg that's a wandering into the aisle is never a leg that's a comfortably a wandering into the aisle. For me, it's just if you're next to the window, basically, when other people join the train, the first place they'll go is next to the person next to the window.
Yeah,
it's sort of like a game of noughts and crosses.
Yeah,
but actually, me and that guy both bald. We actually did look like noughts from above. Weirdly, but the position next to the guy's next to the window, that free seat next to him is on the aisle. So that's where someone will the first. If someone comes on the train, that's where they'll sit opposite you.
Mm.
So you now don't have legroom, and all you can do is shift to your right. You're just opposite another bald tosser, and you've got no legroom there either. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
I see, so that guy next to the window is in the best position. Anyway, that was really taken by this bald guy. I went diagonally opposite to him initially. Mm-hmm. This guy looks a bit like me in the future, and he did a little thing where he went, is there a bin up there?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I went, yes. And he handed me his coffee cup and I put it in the bin for him.
Very good.
Bald men reaching out over the generations, their hands touching, helping each other. The bald connection lasts for 1,000 years.
That's how you mate, isn't it?
That's how we mate, yeah. Mm. So he's now will have, probably the fission would have taken place, but now there'll be three of him now. He'll have woken up and there'll be three of him because of the bald fishing. Whereas you wouldn't barely look at each other, would you? You with your barnets, you don't help each other out in that way, do you?
There's too much hair jealousy going on.
You're thinking, who will sire the future of the herd? It'll be me or this pursuit git.
It better be me because I want them to be glossy. Glossy!
Glossy with just a hint of curl.
Whereas me and the bald man, we know that neither of us will either sire anyone in the herd. That's why we will touch fingers and reproduce by fission, which now bald people reproduce, just to emphasize that again, fission. And remember, it's completely impossible to contract herpes from fission. Now,
but you can get it from touching an old bald man.
Oh, yeah. They're rancid with it, generally. So people started trooping onto the train. So I then shuffled over it, as you do, to sit opposite the bald guy. So there's two zeros on that side. Yep. And then two crosses, two people with hair, sat in the two seats next to us. And the whole train filled up with people.
Yep.
Suddenly, loads and loads of people. And they're all football fans. So I thought, hey, we're on our way to Brighton. So I said to them, I said to this guy, the guy who sat opposite, the diagonally to me, so next to the old bald guy, I said, what did I say? I said,
Was it a derby?
No, I didn't.
Ah, cup final day. The magic of the cup.
I can almost smell the sausage and onions on your breath. Is that okay?
Bovril all round.
Oh, God, I love a fucking awful pie. Do you love an awful pie?
And then you get out your little wooden ratchet thing.
My little wooden ratchet starts going, quick, 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 quick. So I thought engage in some football banter.
Mm-hmm. You've got what it takes. You can talk.
It's a Sunday.
Day.
It's a nice day. Yeah.
You'd been to a football match, I believe, only the day before.
I had, because I'm an Arsenal fan. Yeah. I support Arsenal. I have an Arsenal season ticket. I'd been to see Arsenal the day before. Now, I knew we were heading to Brighton. So this was the train to Brighton. Something in my brain went, these are Brighton fans. No. They're all jumping on the old train to go to Brighton for the Brighton match. So my brain just told me that. And I, for some reason, took that on as an implicit assumption. Anyway, so I said to the guy diagonally opposite to me, I said to him, so who are you playing today in the big match? Hope everyone remembers the shin pads. Although it's awful, though, the way now that big money signings have ruined the game to a degree. They've all got PR agents and stuff now because it's all about social media. In my day, all they got was a bowl of Bovril. That's what they all got paid, wasn't it? They got paid in Bovril, and after the match, they all had a Bovril bath. Then they smoked Bovril. They used to smoke Bovril bongs, bongrils.
Out of a pipe. Yeah.
Out of a bong pipe, Bovril. I said, who are you playing? To this guy, sat equal and opposite me. So this guy was a sort of normal man in his 30s, mm-hmm. hair on his head.
Yep.
Just a normal football fan guy. And I said, who are you playing today? And he said, Tottenham. He said Tottenham.
Mm-hmm.
Right. He said Tottenham. Now, either I hadn't actually said what I thought I'd said.
Yeah.
And either I'd said, or he didn't. I think he must have interpreted what I'd said as, who are you playing today?
Because he was in a Tottenham strip.
Was he? Yes. Well, this is pivotal. Was he wearing a strip?
No, I'll come on to that in a minute. He said Tottenham, and for some reason, my brain said these are all Brighton fans, and they're off to play Tottenham.
Yeah, and there you are, sat as a. I mean, even I understand this. You're a fan of Tottenham's arch rival, correct?
I am a fan of Tottenham's arch rival. Now, which I then announced to him very proudly because I thought he was a Brighton fan, yeah. And that he was off to play Tottenham. So I said, "Who are you playing today?" He said Tottenham. I said, "Oh, I'm an Arsenal fan." Mm. Like that to him.
Yep. And the punching began.
And the reason my face looks okay is because I actually punched my face out and then back in so many times that it's just coincidentally it's reformed its natural shape. But it's actually loads smaller than usual because they've punched it all in.
And you're actually able to take parts from the old man's bald head face just to patch up yours.
Well, that's what. Luckily, the A&E squad, is that what they're called?
Yeah.
The A&E squad that visited that saved my life on that train, yeah. Said, Henry, you wouldn't have survived this if we hadn't had the parts to hand.
Well, the train would have diverted directly to A&E, wouldn't they?
Yeah, it would have done. Yeah, they do that
as soon as they heard you utter that word
in instances like this.
Yeah.
And but of course I was the equivalent of like an old sort of MG that had been wrecked. But luckily there was an even older. There was a kind of
in the scrapyard next
in
door.
In the scrapyard, they had all the parts they needed. And they actually said to me, "You know what, Henry? I don't know if it's more your face or more that other old bald bastard's face now, but
But here is his wife. She may well follow you around for a few months, pining."
Obviously, we say wife. It was a bald fission version of himself wearing a female wig, isn't it? So essentially, this is quite an awkward, but I hadn't realised my faux pas yet, which is that essentially, he was telling me who he was supporting rather than who they were playing. Mm. So I thought, oh, is it Brighton fans off to play Tottenham? Now, Look, I know that, you know, I'm not into the football rivalries and stuff. I know they're all a load of rubbish. You know, everyone's just the same supporting their team and stuff. But, you know, for a bit of fun banter, I then started getting stuck into Tottenham. And I said, oh, you can really attack them. Their defence is rubbish. And basically, I just carried on like this for a while. And then I suddenly, it's a bit like in a, because I realised that, I do pick up basic social signals. Mm-hmm.
The sharpening of an axe.
For example.
The stuffing of a sock with snooker balls.
These little social signs. the waxing of a body bag. And then what happened was, it was a bit like in a film, you know, like in a film, like in the Da Vinci Code or something, where someone suddenly I noticed a little, an obscure symbol tattooed to his arm. It was a chicken sat on a football. And I looked on his shirt and there's a chicken sat on a football, and there's everyone's shirts in the Britain, there's a chicken sat on a football, which is I believe is the Tottenham logo, isn't it? It's a sort of cockerel on a football.
Is it?
And all of them were Tottenham fans. So then it was just incredibly embarrassing. It was really, really awful. But also I was completely, as I described the seating situation, I was completely wedged in. And also, you know, the corridor, you know, the aisle, everything was wedged with Tottenham fans. And the ball guy opposite me wouldn't even look at me in the eyes anymore.
He doesn't want to deepen that emotional connection. He's
no, it's over for him.
He's already started the grieving process.
And basically, I looked at my phone, and I realised I had 40 minutes until Three Bridges. I knew for a fact they were going on to Brighton, which is beyond where I was going. So I was going to have to sit the rest of the journey. It was just really, really awful. Really, really embarrassing.
And did you at any point go, sorry, I thought you were, no, but I thought you were Brighton.
Thanks, Ben, for that loving portrait. That loving and affectionate portrait of how I might have dealt with it. I felt in a way that would have been worse. I didn't know what to do. I put my AirPods in.
Mm, right.
But I didn't play any music in them because I wanted to hear if they were planning my murder. But weirdly...
You just kept the 999 line open at all times.
Just kept it open, ready to go. But of course, I was a moving target because the train was moving. So how would I tell 999 where I was? It'd be impossible. It'd be literally impossible. I'm moving through Sussex.
I'm currently being thrown out of a train somewhere in the middle of West Sussex.
Also, they've got three bridges to choose between in terms of throwing me off.
It's
one.
A nightmare.
Probably throwing me off all three.
And luckily, it was on the way there, right? It wasn't on the way back after a belly full of strong lagers.
That's true. And also, Tottenham did actually have to go on to lose that game in almost exactly the way that I'd laid out that they might, through having a poor defence.
Let's turn on the beam machine.
You bet.
Yes, please.
This week's topic, as sent in by Dan from Bremen.
Thanks, Dan.
Is sharks. What does the shark in Jaws represent?
Oh, very good, Ben. Very, 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 very good. Very, very good.
Russia.
It's always Russia.
It's always Russia. Of course, the great thing about Jaws is you actually don't see the
shark. You actually don't see Brezhnev until the end, do you?
You don't see Brezhnev until the final scene where they put a gas canister in his mouth, don't they, and blow his head up.
The shark is Russia, powered by Brezhnev.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then, so who is the sheriff then? Because he's a Russian agent, isn't he, initially?
That's right. The sheriff's the bad guy, isn't he?
On who
the
appears to be anti-shark, but actually... What the shark and the... No, because the mayor's the good guy. The mayor is America. The mayor is capitalism, because he wants to keep this thing going.
Keep the beach going.
Oh, I see.
And if I want to go and party on the beach in Cape Cod or whatever it is...
It's right, your right.
It's my right to get my legs bitten off while I'm having an ice cream and a frosty beer. Yeah.
Just as it's the shark's right to bare teeth and to
my
to,
right, my choice.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
If I was to dispatch my children on a lilo...
Yeah.
Into the blood-soaked waters.
Exactly. And if your leg happens to float its way towards the back door of Big Bill's meaty beach buffet and wend its way into one of his burgers, then that's just capitalism just flourishing, isn't it?
Yeah, if he wants to take that opportunity to grow the economy and grow his family and improve his business, fine. And it's someone else's choice if they want to have a burger with an ankle sticking out of it.
Or if you want to get over the fat, Mike, that you've lost your leg by eating your own leg.
Eat my own leg. The suits from City Hall aren't going to be shutting me down.
It's literally a foot long sub, isn't it? Because it's
yeah. So the sheriff is he's one of your pinko agitators, basically.
Which one's Rob Schneider? No, not Rob Schneider.
He's the sheriff.
He's come from the.
So he's the hero. Yeah,
he's come from New York City. Well, that's what you think.
New York City,
full of its liberals.
He initially tries to defeat the shark with jazz, doesn't he?
He does.
Which doesn't work. Just makes the shark more angry because the shark hates jazz.
It's actually not Rob Schneider, is it?
Is it? Which have we got right? Is it the Schneider or the Rob that we've got?
It's Roy Schneider.
Roy Schneider.
Yeah.
Rob Schneider was in Deuce Bigelow, Male Gigolo.
Yeah. Roy Schneider, New York exile. They say he doesn't understand this town. He's trying to shut the beach down.
Why has he been exiled? Is it because he accidentally killed a man because he was on the buddle and he shot his own partner in front of six children who he also shot because they were on the buddle?
Because Hollywood had already released 58 films that week with that backstory.
Yeah.
They decided against that. And that he just wanted to move with his family somewhere where there was a nice beach.
Upsize? So it's more sort of property.
Just upsizing. Yeah. So even though he was enjoying the upsizing...
But he did accidentally kill his mortgage advisor because he was on the burdle.
He was on the edge.
He never should have brought a gun to that mortgage meeting.
But goddammit, I'm a cop.
Give me a badge.
And the other one. The Blue Peter one that you keep in your ankle sock.
And the one that says, I'm 38 today. who's Quint? There's definitely someone called Quint, isn't it?
Quint is, he's the fisherman. He's the veteran.
The sea dog.
He was the guy who was on the USS Indianapolis. A mission so secret they didn't even send out distress codes when the Hungarian torpedo hit us and we were sinking.
And they were like, everybody's so dead, you might as well just send us a bunch of croutons to pour in the ocean because it's man and shark soup you're looking at here, baby. I didn't literally mean it about the croutons.
Stop, I lived in croutons. And now they're shooting down the crouton planes. God damn it. That crouton pilot was my best friend. What a senseless waste.
Of course, 200 of the guys survived the shark and actually ended up dying from brain injuries from croutons falling from a great height. That's the irony of one of the ironies. Yeah, I mean, he's absolutely brilliant, that character.
He was a haunted man of the sea who'd been screwed over by the man.
But he describes, Ben, there's this incident which happened in World War II where loads of them, and he says, 259 people went into the ocean.
259 sharks came out.
259 sharks came out wearing their clothes. And they now walk amongst us. And one of them is President of the United States of America. America.
America.
America.
America.
I'd like two tickets for the Chattanooga Choo Choo.
America. America.
Get me the DA.
A slice of old mama's apple pie down the Alamo in New York City.
Oh, just give up now. You'll never be an actor, Mr. Clemens.
Burgers.
So I don't remember that. So is he saying that when his ship sank, there were lots of sharks there?
He said that his ship was delivering the bomb.
Basically, the hottest woman in the history of the United States. Because it was the 70s and it was, yeah.
They were delivering a super hot chick.
Weapons grade babe.
Weapons grade babe.
Yeah, atomic babe that was going to be dropped onto the enemy.
So he was delivering the bomb to where, though? To
wherever the airstrip was that had the bombers that was going
to
drop it.
Yeah, drop it on Japan.
So it was so secret, no distress signal was sent.
I see. So then when it sank, loads of sharks turned up.
Those sharks, and they're bobbing out in the water.
297 people went into the water,
and 475 people came out of the water.
Because depending on how you define a person.
Defining it.
Both guys have been fishing in the water. Conditions were perfect.
But why didn't he get eaten by a shark? Is that what he's saying?
Well, I guess he survived. This, basically, for some reason, they decided to give this guy a backstory as to why he hated sharks, as opposed to just the usual reason, which is everyone just hates sharks because they're sharks. But this guy has a specific backstory about sharks. Because I've never been crossed by a shark or had an issue with a shark. I do hate sharks.
Yeah.
Because I'm a normal human. And no matter what they tell you, sharks are evil. They should be wiped out. Shouldn't they?
Definitely. They kill seals. I'm a big fan of seals.
It's important that we make that clear. Our position on sharks, along the same goes for spiders. Oh, they help get rid of flies.
No. Sorry, you're wrong about spiders there. Spiders are...
Oh, no, Mike's got a thing about spiders. Yeah. Because Mike hates flies even more than you're supposed to.
I will not clear a spider out of this house. I refuse.
Yeah.
I absolutely refuse.
Why? Because they're helping you in your aim to exterminate all flies.
Yes.
Well, have you heard Mike's backstory about flies? He tried to put on a picnic a few years ago.
214 people came into that picnic.
No distress signal was sent.
No distress signal was sent because it was just a picnic. Dead eyes. Lifeless eyes.
Well, those are the eyes that I have. I always think of that. People think of that scene because he describes the shark's eyes, those lifeless eyes, those Henry Packer-esque eyes.
No. Come on. Bovine. Come on.
Oh, you're giving me bovine?
Yeah.
I think more requin. What is that? What do we say? Shark. That's French for shark.
Is it?
Nice.
Requin.
Nice word.
What's the word for shark-esque? I think I've got, people say I've got shark-esque eyes. By the way, on topic of shark-esque eyes, a little important fact for our listeners to know. If you get attacked by a shark, one of the ways you're supposed to deal with it is maintain eye contact. They become socially awkward. And they invite you around for dinner, which neither of you want to go to, but it's just so awkward you end up going. Mm-hmm. And it ends up turning into more of an awkward friendship with the shark, doesn't it?
And you're eating another diver.
You're eating another diver, probably your friend, colleague, or relative, generally, of yours, who have been taken down. No, they say go for their eyes, don't they? So, because I remember when I grew up, my brother had a shark book. This book almost had a kind of religious, not religious, I don't know. It was like, well, I suppose it was the equivalent of the Necronomicon.
Yeah.
The Book of the Dead. For me, it had a kind of religious power. It was so terrifying. Mm. So everything else about my brother was normal. He liked badminton. He did his homework and stuff.
Yeah.
He listened to his Walkman. Mm-hmm. And he also owned the Book of the Dead, Necronomicon.
Can I just say that every time you say Necronomicon, you get it wrong. So I don't know what the right word is.
We
always get like 20
it's
emails.
It's too late for that now.
And I think...
The people who complained about that, they've long gone though, surely. They can't bear it.
Necroniskeptics.
I don't care about them.
I mean, I think it's important that we keep...
They can keep sending in their complonic complaints, Nuklon.
They're trying to trick us into saying it correctly and summoning the necromancer.
The necromancer himself.
Which we won't do.
Or the Necronicon novelist.
By the way, something people often don't realise. Do you realise the Necronicon got turned down by like 15 publishers before it actually got made? It's one of those things that really reminds you, just stick at it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, the sad thing, though, is that the necromancer didn't know it would be success until long after his death and the death of thousands.
Thousands upon thousands of innocent souls that were burnt in the forge that created the Necronomicon.
Yeah, I think we're going to pass, actually, but really keep up. We really admire, you know, just stick at it, you know?
Do you think you'd be good at writing a recipe book for air fryers?
Because there's a big market for that at the moment.
It's ready cash.
In a sense, my book represents a human buffet in which mankind will boil and burn throughout the eons.
Yeah, we're looking more for sort of whimsical stories about families of rabbits, things like that, anthropomorphized badgers, got that kind of stuff.
I do have an idea about a free-floating eye with teeth.
what about sort of personal memoir about the death of your parents, grief and wild swimming? How about that?
Well, I killed my parents with the bones of my uncles. Is that the kind of thing?
No, but in terms of, yeah, so that this shark book was like the Necronomicon to me, right? It was an object of almost religious sort of reverence and terror that I held in equal measure, which is exactly what the Necronomicon's going for.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Which is like, you want it, but you don't dare look in it.
Yeah. You're terrified about what you may summon.
Exactly. Yeah.
In the dead of night.
Will you open up a chapter and it's just a big staircase?
Yeah. Big wet staircase.
And you end up being sucked into the staircase. And then you come back to life, and you now are the photo of the author of the Necronomicon on the inside back cover.
Yeah.
And you're trapped in his photo forever.
Yeah. And the blurb has changed to fit your biography.
Yeah.
At the age of 7. Which is singularly unimpressive.
But you have won the Costa Award for best first book. So
yeah.
Yeah. Swings and roundabouts.
For payment, I was hoping my advance, I was hoping it'd be something more along the lines of 70,000 horse skulls. And I will take my royalty in tears.
So I used to open its pages, and I would literally glimpse. I was so terrified of the photos and of the. I would that glimpse just through, like opening a crack in a door, you know, with one eye. I would sort of peer into the book, and there was one horrifying page that was just a blood-soaked shark teeth, just row after row of teeth.
Nice.
But there was a great photo of a guy that had a huge sharp mouth-shaped shark bite, shark mouth-shaped bite over his body, who'd survived. And he said in his thing, he'd reached, the shark had encased his upper body in its mouth. I think that bit just will happen. There's no point fighting that bit. If a shark comes towards you,
you're going to get encased.
If anything, I'd say swim into its mouth, because at least then you're in control of the narrative. Do you know what I mean? So get your torso nice and wedged front, just straight as you can into its mouth. And then what you do is you reach up with your arms.
Yeah.
Of course, remember, a shark, like a bird, its eyes are on the side of its head. So you can reach both your arms up. And if you can reach the eyes, just get your hands into the eye. Just start
From within the gob, you're saying? You're going to scratch the inside of your arms a lot, aren't you, on the old, on the teeth?
There may be some scratching, Mike. I'm sorry to break this to you, but yeah, you get your upper body in the mouth of a great white.
You're in salt water as well. That's gonna
it's gonna smart.
It's gonna be sting like billy.
There's gonna be some stinging. But basically, you just have to punch away at the eyes, get your hands in, all the stuff that people automatically want to do when they see my eyes. You just want to get in there and just start whacking them because they're so dark. They stare into you. They just stare into
harpoon
you.
Harpoon those mothers.
You just want to harpoon them because you're because. You're staring into the blackness in the heart of everything with these, aren't you? The same with the shark. So you get your fists in their eyes, just grab onto them, like mess around with them, give them a squish. Just get in there. Just get squishy with it.
Does require some presence of mind. Does this?
Yeah.
Had this guy claim that he that's what he'd done? That's how he survived?
Yeah, that's how he'd survived. And I think the other one is punch him on the nose.
What about shove a grenade in their gill?
There we go.
A gill grenade. It's good, but you'll be going down with that shark, Ben, probably, if you're in its mouth.
I'm that petty that I think I'd rather take it down.
Go down with the shark. Yeah.
What if you really went for it, swam right in, so that almost the teeth don't get you, you just go straight in. So all that's left then is your feet poking out. You get to shore, and then you can walk around like a sort of novelty shark on feet. Like, do you know what I mean?
Good. With your head sticking out of its anus?
Well, in an ideal world, yes. Or cloaca, or whatever it is they might
play
have.
The jingle.
Welcome to the Cloaca Zone.
Punch out a couple of armholes.
Yeah, exactly.
You're basically a kid's party. You're basically a kid's party ready.
Great white poncho.
Yeah, or maybe you could, like, there'd be a seafood restaurant that would want you to stand out the front.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm going to say for a maximum of 3 days, at which point you will start
being a little bit putrid.
You will start being a little bit putrid.
But that's what I would do if I was attacked by a shark. Do you ever get great whites in Britain? They've never come this far, have they?
Not that I know of.
It's a good, like, sort of tabloid summer story, isn't it? They'll see something and be on the front page.
Yeah.
I've got no idea. I've certainly never tried to answer that question. Maybe we've got a sharkologist who could tell us.
Sorry, what question? Whether shark's got an anus?
No, I'm confident the shark has an anus.
You're confident the shark's got an anus?
I'm confident.
That's a big call.
Thank you. Whether or not sharks have been in a great white's been in British waters.
Oh, yeah.
In living memory.
Sorry, I'm just Googling, does a shark have an anus? Because I'm...
Surely it's got an anus.
It's got an anal fin.
You're not going to name one of your fin. You're not going to name a fin an anal fin unless it's near an anus, surely.
Okay, here we go. Digestive system of a shark. The stomach terminates at the pylorus, which leads to the duodenum, and then to the spiral valve.
Ooh.
Oh, that sounds cool.
The spiral valve is a coiled organ. It increases surface area so the nutrients can be absorbed. The spiral valve then empties into the rectum and anus, and then into the cloaca.
Wow, they've got everything going on.
They've chosen
all the extras. They've got all the options. They've got the cigarette lighter.
No wonder people talk about them as like the perfectly evolved killer. Of course they've got it all.
Yeah. But
quite often they've got a lot of chambers to their stomachs, haven't they? Because quite often you will find someone's leg, someone's arm, someone's head.
Oil rig. Yeah.
One thing I do know about sharks is that they internally gestate their young. Is that right?
Yes, in the same way that we do. Right?
Yeah, but the sharks quite often eat each other in the womb.
Good Lord.
I think that sometimes happens.
Wow. What a training ground.
10 sharks went in.
From the very get-go, a fight to the death before birth.
And we'll be showing that on the screen for 3 hours non-stop. And that's what I thought we could do at our book launch for the Necronicon. I think that's right. And then sometimes the mothers will eat the young will eat the mother. They're one of the evil animals, isn't it? So sharks are evil. I contend that spiders are evil. Spiders, the kids eat the mother eats the brother. Everyone's eating each other, isn't it? They're just evil.
No, spiders aren't evil. Spiders are pitiless. They're not evil, I would say. But the shark is...
So you admire a spider, Mike, for its pitiless.
I hugely admire a spider.
Well, one thing which comes up in shark films quite a lot is something which quite often at some point someone in the film will say, well, of course, in a way I do admire them, yes, because they're the perfect predator. All they do is kill.
Although if you do manage to stand on the beach, then you're completely safe. But they're otherwise the perfect killer. Or if you're on, for example, a raft or a boat... Then you're completely safe.
Safe.
Or nowhere near the sea at all.
Or nowhere near the sea.
Or a bridge.
Perfect predator.
You're completely safe.
And they could probably kill you. But also think about it. They quite fancy going in the sea, don't you? And they know that. Although you're safe up to about your own, certainly around the coast of most countries in the world, you're pretty much safe all the time because they don't come into very shallow waters. But they're the perfect predator. They can kill with a left fin. They can kill with their right fin.
They can kill with a glance.
They can kill with an outfit. And they're unencumbered by morality. Like, you know, guinea pigs and stuff have, don't they? The fact is, all animals are the same. They're all they want to do is kill. It's just sharks are quite good at it.
Just some of them want to kill cabbages, you mean?
Exactly. Yeah, which are alive. Cabbages are alive. They have cellular life.
I remember when they found a really old shark that I think they thought might be the oldest living thing on Earth. Maybe oldest, not living things. Obviously, there's trees that are old, but, you know, like oldest of animals. And I remember in the paper, the thing they always led with was like, this shark remembers Henry VIII. And you go, no, it doesn't.
But that was the thing, because it had absolutely no anecdotes. That was what was so disappointing about it, do you remember? Because they had anecdotologists from all around the world gathered. They thought, we're going to get the best anecdotes of all time here. He literally didn't raconte anything, did he?
Were you there at the sinking of the Mary Rose then? I was actually around Madagascar at the time. It was just, I had a lovely summer. But it was quiet. Nothing was going on, really.
I was mainly just doing sort of following my instincts. mainly just instinct stuff, I think.
Eating trout.
Just, yeah.
And is it still living?
I think so, yeah.
So it remembers... It remembers when you get a pint in London for less than £7.
Hats off to Sharknado, probably. There's a film recommendation.
I've not seen it.
I've not seen Sharknado.
It's a shameless piece of cinema. It's an awful lot of fun.
Good.
So I've seen sharks, right? I've seen sharks when I've been snorkeling a few times. Mm-hmm. I've seen a thing called black-tip reef sharks, which are, they're just like fun-sized sharks. They're about the size, 2.5 times the size of your average small dog.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. It's about the size of a large dog?
Not quite. Three quarters of a large dog.
Three quarters. Or 6/8 of two large dogs, depending on how you want. But only lengthways.
But 6/8, but not 3/4.
It's whatever's clearer.
So 3/4 of one dog or 6/8 of two dogs. Yeah? You're saying?
Yeah, language is this way of whatever makes it clear to you. But the important thing is this is only lengthways. So imagine a large dog that could fit in probably like
but the width of probably 2.5 medium dogs. You see?
But you're having to fit the dog into a tube that's about, so in diameter, I'd say twice the width of your average sewage pipe on the outside of a Victorian building.
Okay.
So
of a medium-sized town.
Of a medium-sized town.
Yeah.
No, so it's because they're lengthways. They don't really have much width size, but they're quite long. But you know what? They're about the size. I mean, you know what? They're about twice the size. No, probably about 10 times the size of a toy shark.
Okay. But not the inflatable ones.
Not the inflatable ones. It's quite hard to sort of imagine how. It's quite hard to think of how big.
God, if only someone had invented some sort of a unit for length.
You know, when you go to a foreign hotel and they've got like a weirdly round pillow.
No.
It's like a sausage-shaped pillow. No?
So okay. It's 2.5 times the radius of that.
Okay. A sausage dog, expand it in all proportions 3 times.
So it's just a big sausage dog.
Well, now hang on. The legs will be massive now, relatively. Oh, God! Run away!
Tell me in British supermarket baguette.
Okay, easy. Imagine you're trying to recreate a kind of World War II style Gatling gun out of baguettes. So you'd probably put about nine of them in a circle. That's about how big it is, actually. That's about that big. Yeah. To be honest, it's quite hard to tell how big they are, these shocks, because... One thing I noticed about them is they've got it. They've got a glamour. They've got like when you see them, it's like fucking hell. You just can't look anything else. They've got an absolute X factor. These things. They've got a kind of there's just a sinister quality to the way they roam. They've got a different energy to all the other fish.
Oh, we've all known guys like that, right?
Yeah, but it's not often that three of them get together and do a podcast. And then two of them leave because they from the original lineup and then replaced by Mike and Ben. Is it? So one thing I noticed about them, which is really interesting, is the way they look like... They look like an accident of the light or something. They look like they're not... They're not even real. They look like they're not there because they're so well camouflaged that from the top, they look like... The bottom of the sea as seen from the top, and from the bottom, they look like the top of the sea as seen from the bottom. You know?
like the way you'd paint a Spitfire.
Ooh,
so they're green on top and then grey underneath, aren't they?
So and with a big sort of like bullseye insignia on each side.
That's right. Yeah. And then like a sort of 50s style pinup painted at the front.
No, but they've got basically from the bottom they're light because. The surface of the ocean looks light from below, and from the top it's going to look dark. So they look like a kind of they look a bit like Predator in the Predator films. You know, like just they look like just light is moving.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? But you look at the light, and it's in the shape, and it's the shape of pure death. That's right. It's death itself. Death made fish. Yes, that's right. Death made fish.
So when you were in recently on holiday in Sri Lanka and you went snorkeling, was that the kind of place where there was someone in charge and they would tell you that it was okay and these sharks aren't going to eat you? Or was that something you had to work out yourself?
Well, no, what was great about it was, not from far from where we were staying, you take a little boat out and all there was this deserted little rocky outcrop with 2,000 to 3,000 people on it. And probably about 300 boats all floating around
and a Burger King.
A really, really great Burger King. So you know, what was the question, Ben? I didn't really understand it.
Were you supervised, and was someone there saying
there's like a sort of harpoon sheriff?
Yeah, like, or was someone saying, you know, if you see a shark this big you probably need to be worried, but these ones are
no.
fine. Do you know what I mean?
There was no supervision. No, because I think I think the good thing about the 2,000, 3,000 people is that the sharks are just like...
It's an absolute buffet for a shark, isn't it?
It's too much of a good thing almost. It's like,
you're snorkeling, but you're also just punching anything with an eyeball in the eyeball that you can see, basically.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing.
Thrashing through the water.
But crucially, putting your head in the mouth first and then going for the eyes.
Yeah. And with the small fish, often just putting my head in the mouth kills them outright. No, because these are known to be... Basically, I think the truth about the big great whites and stuff, they're gentle giants anyway. No, they're not, actually. But they don't come to these busy areas, I think, just for some reason. I don't know. Like there was no chance of seeing a great white or a huge shark. But so actually, you're desperately wanting to see a shark, and when you see one, it's amazing.
They'd rather bag a sea lion.
Exactly.
According to this website I've just found, the last shark attack in Sri Lanka was recorded in 2004.
There you go.
So it was about time for another one when you were.
It
there,
was actually. That's one I'm looking at. It's one of those things, shark attacks, where you know statistically, it's so unlikely, isn't it? But it's such a viscerally unpleasant way to die that person who was attacked in 2004, you know, they had such a shit time while that was happening that it just permeates the culture as a fear.
They didn't die, in fact, this person.
Okay.
They were 11 years old, no injury.
Wow.
Whereas in 1950, on the 1st of January, a man called Abu Baker went shark fishing, had his buttock removed, and the species, possibly a lemon shark.
Really?
And it removed his buttock?
Hmm.
That's going to stay with me.
Can you survive without a buttock?
It says here that in the 20th century, a man called Rodney Jonklas was collecting ornamental fish in an eastern province of Sri Lanka when a black-tipped reef shark...
Oh, wow, that's the one assured was completely safe, though.
Attacked him. There was no injury, and he beat off the shark with his collecting net. So it doesn't sound particularly...
That is extraordinary. I find it extraordinary that has made the annals of history.
Yeah. Yes.
That someone's bothered to write that down. That it survived to this day.
Yeah.
Yeah, no injury.
So a really tiny shark came near me and nothing happened.
And I hit it with my net and it went away.
Cue immortality. That is weird, isn't it?
Well, I'll remember the name Rodney Jonklas forever. Right, sharks. Final thoughts.
Can't live with them.
Probably could live without them.
No, look, I know sharks, they're obviously part of the ecosystem, aren't they? It's important. Without sharks, no one would eat one in 6,000 divers. And there'd be too many divers, they would eat too many muesli bars, wouldn't they? Then there wouldn't be enough muesli bars.
Well, that leads to intensive farming, doesn't it? You know,
then you're over-farming the muesli, aren't you? Mm-hmm. And then the whole ecosystem.
Polluting the rivers. That then means that people can't go wild swimming. They look for some other sort of aquatic pursuits. What do they get into? They get into diving. It's an awful cycle.
It's a terrible, terrible cycle.
Well, thank you, sharks.
Thank you, sharks. Thank you, Dan from Bremen.
Thanks for your good work. And also, thanks for being that rare thing which is both the most deadly predator on Earth, the most terrifying, amoral killer that thinks of nothing but disemboweling and chomping on the faces of any other living being. That's all it cares about. Most terrifying, just a literal metaphor for death. For being that, and for being quite popular with as a toy for kids.
Yeah, or just an unusual choice of steak. Go with just a simple bit of lemon. Keep it simple. A bit of spinach.
This episode of Three Bean Salads is dedicated to the memory of Rodney Jonklas.
Let's read your emails.
When you send an email, you must give thanks to the postmasters that came before.
Good morning, postmaster. Anything for me?
Just some old shit.
When you send an email, this represents progress. Like a robot shoeing a horse.
Give me your horse.
My beautiful horse.
You can email us at threebeansaladpod@gmail.com. This is from Andy.
Hello, Andy.
Hi, Andy.
Recently, I found myself watching the hit BBC show World's Most Dangerous Roads, in which I was startled to see TV's Mike Wozniak driving across the wilds of Namibia.
Indeed.
arid, weather-beaten, and showing signs of neglect.
Here we go.
Mike did the best he could in trying circumstances. Namibia, meanwhile, looked beautiful.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage the old switcheroo.
Okay, yes, I see what you're saying. Yeah, you're saying that. What? Hang on, I thought you were trying to say that.
Oh, he's gone the other... What? Oh, he's gone the other way around. He means that... Oh, that's what he meant. What? So, what he said before wasn't actually... I thought it... Now he's gone the other way around with it. Oh, God.
It's the old switcheroo. It was a crisp one. I've got a lot of time for that, Andy, thanks, because usually most switcheroos these days, the fashion is very much for a very, very, very long-winded switcheroo, which is, right. Has its place, is great fun, but that was, so snappy that...
I mean, the switch had hardly been established before it was a rude, wasn't it? Yeah, well, you were barely... Yeah, so it was clever. Mm.
But it takes a huge amount of switcheroo confidence, I think, to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a huge amount of work, because that would have... He'd have whittled it down to that when it would have been a lot longer. The economy is stunning.
New badges in the post.
Okay, this is from Mark.
Hello, Mark.
Henry's doing a great job with his anecdotes and comedy.
Mm.
Thanks, mate.
But I'd like to see more Henry Packer bass baritone singing, if that's available.
Yeah. I do think bass baritone, it's more like, it's sub-contrabass. It's kind of...
It's sub-contrabass.
It's earth woofer. Yeah.
It's earth woofer. It vibrates, actually... certain
bowels,
owls, and certain African prairie dogs.
I'd said bowels, but yeah, I agree. Also with also
owls. So it's owls.
Is it owls, bowels, cows, fowls,
cows,
and jowls?
So Simon and Simon Cowell, unfortunately, is the only owl rhyming thing that isn't interested and has not replied to any of my emails about doing a sub-contrabass tone album. But, you know, it vibrates very, very low. Well, I've actually got a little sub-contrabass, little song I've been singing to myself recently.
Is this the one you used to clean submarines?
It's the one I use. It's the one I used to clean the propellers of submarines, Mike.
Right. A big pardon.
The rest of submarines, most of it's just cleaned by traditional hoovers and Jif.
Hoovers and Jif. Just move it through the water a bit.
Yeah. Yeah, to move it through the water.
It's constantly rinsed.
And a bit of Vircal on the torpedoes. And you're golden, generally. Now, Ben, I know you've done a brilliant Jumentus jingle, haven't you?
I think that would have debuted in last week's episode, but just to help explain that Jumentus does mean smelling of horse piss, here it is again.
Jumentus, Jumentus, it's a word that heaven sent us to define the whiff of a horse's piss, so we describe that scent for us.
But the my sub-contrabass little tone song I'd like to do is about Jumentus, because it's something I sing to myself sometimes. Can I do it?
Yeah.
Please.
It goes like this. Oh, what a Jumentus morning. Oh, what a Jumentus day. I've got a Jumentus feeling. Horse piss is coming my way.
Happy with that, Mark?
Is that what Mark was after?
I think Mark's Christmas has come early for Mark.
Make that into a ringtone, Mark.
Horse piss is coming my way.
Da, 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 and then a big orchestral sweep.
Yeah.
Is that the opening of the musical?
Jumentus, stupendous, tremendous, jumentus. Hospice, hospice everywhere. Hospice, hospice in my hair.
This feels like the final number, I would say, when everyone's running into the streets and kicking through puddles of horse piss.
That's right. Yeah.
Canning it all over the place.
And you get a reprise of the horse piss overture from the beginning, which is 2,000 horses pissing onto timpani drums.
Yeah, exactly.
Isn't it?
And what is the plot of this musical?
Jumentus, three exclamation marks. That's what it's called. It's about a Southern Belle.
Piss-stinking Southern Belle.
A stinking
Comes
Southern
into the
Belle.
Big city for the first time.
Comes into the big bad city.
Yeah, and everyone shuns her for stinking of piss, but she's like, but back in the country, this is what people like.
This is how, this is what we wash with.
Yeah.
And
they've forgotten the old ways in the big city.
Yeah.
But then she falls in love with a horse penis surgeon.
With his cloak of many horse penises. He should already be betrothed to someone in the elite, in the urban elite.
Yes.
Yes.
But maybe she's also entered like a beauty contest. But she has no hope of winning because she stinks.
It's judged on odour alone.
Of horse piss.
Yeah.
But she basically needs to convince the town that the smell of horse piss is a beautiful smell.
Because what they've been used to is just the... What?
Well, they've moved on to the motor car, Mike. This is set in the early days of the Model T Ford, right?
Is it? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this is what this is all about. It's about modernity encroaching on the American South.
And, of course, the cars are replacing the horses.
Exactly.
Yeah. Aren't they?
And petrol fumes are replacing the traditional, more jumentous smells.
So there'd be a song about car piss, wouldn't there?
Yeah, because the piss is the piss. The petrol is the piss of the car. Yeah. And then, of course, the main plot then revolves around, because he tries to create a kind of Franken horse, doesn't he? Which is halfway between a horse and a car.
Mm. A sort of Sir Hogsley.
A bit like a Sir Hogsley, but a Sir Horsley. And the end is a bit like, is it Hamlet? At the end, it's a bit like, so they all drink what they think is lemonade, but it's actually horse piss.
I don't remember that bit of Hamlet.
Well, Henry, you remember what Henry did for his degree? He's going back to the very early folios.
Very early folio.
Yeah, I see.
Yeah, because all his early work was sponsored by horse piss.
It's very so commercial.
But originally he was drinking horse piss out of Yorick's skull, wasn't he? That was the,
right, exactly.
The big moment.
Yeah, yeah.
This is from Luke.
Hello, Luke.
A few weeks ago, I subscribed to your Patreon.
Thank you.
A worthwhile investment to give me access to countless hours of previously unlistened to Bean content. Mm-hmm. I recently put this to good use when I took a 48-hour round trip from London to Sydney in business class. Ooh. We've got a high roller.
Yeah.
Blimey. Round trip, 48 hours.
I assume he would have got off.
He must have stopped off there. Surely. At least walk around the airport.
During which I listened to the aforementioned backlog of extra Bean content for the entire journey.
My word.
Are you aware of there's a modern concept of raw dogging a flight?
I am aware of that. It's
no.
Totally crazy. It's what...
Didn't Haaland do it?
Haaland, Manchester City footballer Haaland, proudly talks about how he can sit on a 14-hour flight not listening to any music.
Not watching any films.
Not going to the toilet? Is that part of it?
I don't know.
But just staring straight ahead at him. And it's a thing now that it's competitive, sort of, there's one-upmanship about to what degree you can raw dog a flight.
The only thing you're allowed to watch, Mike, is that little animated, tiny little plane going across the world.
See, I like that, though. I can get lost in that for a long time.
Yeah, you could raw dog a flight. I bet Mike could raw dog a flight.
Yeah, you could raw dog.
I'd be quite happy, I mean, I'm not including the toilet thing. I'm taking toilet breaks.
I can't even raw dog brushing my teeth.
But it's a... No, I know. I can't raw dog. I listen to radio. I listen to podcasts and stuff and I brush my teeth. But with my, it's about having literally no inner life. Isn't it?
It's not, it's about having a calm and peaceful inner life.
No, because Mike, there's nothing going on in there. No. When Mike isn't absolutely talking to us... It's not even on standby. He's unplugged the telly.
It's shark brain, isn't it?
It's shark brain.
There's no little red light. Yeah.
It's basic instinctive stuff. Yeah. He will flee from fire. He'll flee from heat.
I want to feel, if I feel the heat. Yeah.
If he feels it. But that's the kind of stimulus that he's interested in at that point.
Yeah. But Mike, do you genuinely think you could raw dog a flight?
Yeah, no, with no issue at all.
Wow.
I've done it there's been plenty of times when I've on a long drive or a train journey or whatever, I've just gone, oh, do you know what? I'm just going to shut this all off.
But you're so right, Ben. I can't raw dog brushing my teeth.
No.
I have to have input data. I have to have data. Data needs to be getting processed at all times.
Yeah, me too.
I've got little see the hamsters, isn't it? We've got the hamsters going around. Whereas Mike's like a dead hamster. That's just sort of a fetid. But it's been dead for so long, it doesn't even smell anymore. It's just like powder. It's just like a powdered hamster, isn't it, at the bottom of a wheel. And the wheel doesn't turn anymore. It's becoming completely encrusted on its...
It's been locked up for safety reasons, yeah. The mechanism's been sealed in, yeah.
Luke continues, in addition to the likely permanent damage to my brain caused by such unrestricted access to Henry's ramblings, I believe this business trip may put me in the running for the world record for most environmental damage caused whilst listening to Three Bean Salad. Let me know if/when I can collect my frame certificate. All the best, Luke. Well, what Luke doesn't know about is my listening and tyre burning parties. And I wasn't going to announce them. I've been doing them on the secret just to pilot them, but I will be making them public soon.
Yeah, there's also Henry in my listening sewage processing plant sabotage symposium. Isn't there?
That's right. They're a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And also, actually, I think it's this Friday, I'm doing one of my my carpet bombing of koalas Fridays.
So, Luke, I think, good try. You know, but
we're way ahead of you.
We're way ahead of you. Sorry, Luke.
Patreon.com/3beansalad
Thanks for everyone who signed up at our Patreon.
Thank you.
Patreon.com/3beansalad You get access to our bonus episodes, our Film Corner film review podcast. You get ad-free episodes, and if you sign up at the Sean Bean tier, you get a shout-out from Mike from the Sean Bean Lounge, where Mike spent the whole weekend.
I certainly did.
And it had to be a weekend because it was the annual Let's Maintain the Sean Bean Lounge Hydroelectric Power Station weekend.
It certainly was. Thank you, Ben. And here's my report.
It was Let's Maintain the Sean Bean Hydroelectric Power Station weekend this weekend at the Sean Bean Lounge. While Helen Lees and Moses Gale were pigging an external pipeline, they noticed a small blemish in the dam wall. Caused when J.D. Kirk, Kim Lilly and Rob Trushel from Ohio used it to play Ohio Falls-style semi-aquatic squash with Red Bennett and Axel and Emily. Christopher Hardison skidded up the dam to inspect the blemish more closely and summoned the vision of Matt Butler, the strength of Nancy Reeder Seymour, the courage of Suze Molyneux, the judgment of Richard Lucas, and the B&Q all-in-one wall scanner of Graham Hollingsworth. This revealed this section of the dam wall was inherently weak, and an on-the-spot inquiry led to Adam S. confessing that he had deliberately bought cheaper concrete than budgeted for and used the spare change to fund Katie Duckworth and Nick Saunders' new startup, which is an app that tells you what Rick Astley would be doing right now if he wasn't doing what he is doing. Private investors to the startup included Comedy Gremlin, Ilan Victoria, Joe Bromfield and Rory McMahon, all of whom are currently languishing in the Sean Bean Lounge debtor's jail after the company went bust, with knock-on effects that included all Peruvian pensions being cancelled for the next 50 years. Meanwhile, at the blemish, Welsh Lee felt confident he could fix it from the back, but hadn't brought his scuba handyman kit, so borrowed what he could from Ben Maxwell and Chris, but they'd been planning to teach A. Collins' guinea pig to scuba dive and had only brought minuscule air tanks. Welsh Lee rushed the job, therefore, and managed to turn the blemish into a puncture. On the dry side, Grant Tildesley bravely stemmed the flow of water by inserting his nose, but Barry Hutchinson's aftershave made him sneeze and the puncture became a hole. Daniel McCullum shoved his fist into the hole, but too hard, effectively punching the hole and turning it into a bigger hole. Lees, Leanne Hobden, Stephen Davies and Dan Holt conducted a thorough emergency debate on the merits of using body parts to plug broken dams versus calling a dam plumber, and we await their conclusions with interest. In the meantime, Matthew Apostoloff pointed out the flow of water through the unstable hole was making it steadily larger, a situation not helped by Dan Draper, Rothcat, Rosie Grant and Sonia Shaw using it as a flume and causing further erosion. Emily Hazelhurst, Lola and Tess, thinking quickly, shoved Alex Powells, Nick Skews and Matthew Palfreyman into the hole and commissioned Rebecca Gleason to make a flume closed sign. Peter realised this would be a temporary fix only, panicked and zipped himself into a waterproof hiking bag. Robot Moth Pachapsky decreed that a permanent fix was needed and that the only solution was that the entire dam wall should be laminated. James and Alex were dispatched to the Sean Bean Mega Ryman's, where Tom Machin was on duty, and demanded the biggest maxi-structure laminator on offer. Regrettably, Will Cooper had already bought the large wall laminator, as he and Kate Pigzanola had been commanded to make the Sean Bean Bouldering Centre wipe clean. The next best choice was somewhat larger and designed to laminate off-season skiing resorts. Don McGowan and Kate Buckley lined up the titanic piece of stationary equipment at the foot of the dam, and Harry Longmore activated it with panache, but unfortunately without warning the people left inside. The dam was fixed, although it can no longer generate electricity, so this week we're going to finally plug in Sean Bean's very own homemade thermal neutron nuclear reactor. Thanks all.
Okay, let's finish the show with a version of our theme tune sent in by one of you. This is from Matthew in Swanhaven.
Thank you, Matthew.
Which is on the south coast of New South Wales, Australia.
Mm-hmm.
Dear Beans, I've been listening to the podcast for some time now and have not yet heard a ska interpretation of the theme tune.
Oh, nice.
My attempt to create one is attached. All the best, Matthew from Swanhaven. Well, there we are.
Thank you, Matthew, and thanks everyone for listening.
Thank you very much.
Cheerio.